My hair is so tall today.
Great.
Look how tall it is.
Wow.
She's tall. She plays basketball.
She's leggy. She's a leggy blonde.
She's a leggy blonde. Look at her. Hi, Jillian Pezzavalli.
Hi, Pastor Kine.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, fam, real quick, just a reminder, if you want more Jillian and me, join us on the Patreon.
Yes.
Not only do you get a full ad-free bonus episode every month, but we're doing, like, really fun, cool, like, virtual hangs. So we did drag bingo, which we're doing every month with the amazing Schwa. It's
yes,
so fun.
Yes, we love Schwa.
We did cocktail classes. We're doing Zoom happy hours.
Yes.
We're doing a magic show. I'm going to Chicago to, like, be with the musician, like, live, and then we're going to...
There's a musician and a magician?
Sorry, I'm a magician. I said musician. But you
Look,
know what?
I think magicians and musicians are just interchangeable.
You made the same point.
I
was
right?
just gonna make I was gonna say the exact same thing. But it's so much fun. You get ad-free versions of these episodes. Tell them, oh my god, we did Love is One.
We did Love is One. So it's yeah, it's every versions of these episodes and then like the series,
yes.
right? So we're doing like The Curious Case and Natalia Grace. We just did Love Has One.
We're figuring out Twin Flames. We're doing it.
Yeah, we're doing Twin Flames. We did like all the Wild Crime series,
yes.
Blood Mountain is on the list too. Just all of those ones that have like multiple episodes.
I mean, it's like Making a Murderer, Serial, The
yeah.
Staircase, all those like back in the day. There's I mean, literally over 400 episodes. Go check it out. It's
yeah.
patreon.com/truecrimeobsessed.
Yeah.
And join the Facebook group. That's my last pitch for this for today. Like, I really want you in there.
I saw someone who posted today, like, hi, I'm here because you told me about it.
Yay.
So I went and I found it.
You will not be disappointed. You can find, there's actually like also regional groups and there's like brunches happening in certain
Ooh.
Cities, like in Minneapolis. I think there's one happening. And in Salt Lake, Steve and I are going to Salt Lake City to go to brunch with the Salt Lake City TCO group.
Is this the time to tell you that I started watching The Real Housewives of Salt Lake City?
Look, I don't know anything about anything, but I do know that that finale was off the...
That's
off
why I started from the very beginning.
Whatever. Yeah, Natalie did too.
Yeah, Natalie and I did it together. Virtually together. We were texting about it last night. Every like day or two, we're like, what up? Where are you? And I'm like, girl, they just got to San Diego.
I mean...
If you know, you know. I'm in now, so we can talk about it in my DMs if you'd like.
Oh my! All right, what are we talking about today?
So this is a documentary on HBO called Devil in the Ozarks.
Yeah.
It is amazing. This is a standalone doc that's 42 minutes. Everyone take note.
Yes.
It is possible. This is excellently done.
It's really good.
Doesn't have to be 11 episodes or 2.5 hours. We can do this in a cool 42.
This is the story of one of the most evil and dangerous criminals I have ever prosecuted because the person does not at first appear to be that way.
He was right there and nobody knew.
I heard what I thought was someone had fired a rifle.
He took a lot away from us.
Sometimes I still tell myself it's not real, that that didn't happen.
I'll never forget what I have seen.
You know, it's just disgusting to think that one man has that much power to do that.
If he's not a psychopath or a sociopath, they're going to have to redefine the term.
So, I was just thinking, like, we're in Rogers, Arkansas. And first of all, the abbreviation is AR. And
yeah.
I wasn't sure if it was Arkansas or Arizona. I really didn't know.
Arizona's the Z.
It's AZ.
If you have a Z, it lies with a Z. If you have a Z, you point that shit out.
But I was saying that it's so funny that these docs all open the same way now, where it's a drone shot.
Yes.
It's like an intersection of like some, like two streets and a water tower. That's every single
time.
And
what's funny, you know, I'm sorry to bring this up again, but that's literally how the Paradise Lost, that takes place in Arkansas. That's how Joe Berlinger, it's like the Metallica play.
Yes.
There's that water tower.
Yes.
There's the drone shot.
Every time, it's real common these days.
All right, let's talk about Amy Harrison because she's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, she's our victim. She's one of our victims and she's incredible.
She's a sexual assault survivor. She's a lawyer and she is here to tell her story.
Yeah, and it's like it's a struggle and you can tell that it's like taken her some time to develop the strength to tell her story. She's done the work and she's, you know, I love her. She tells us that she got married young. She said that her and her husband met when they were both 21. They got married at 23. They still had a couple years of college left before graduating in 1995.
Yeah, they moved to Northwest Arkansas and she says, like, I moved here because my husband had a job to work as a police officer. So Amy didn't know anything about the town before they moved.
I had no idea what we were moving to. So I was kind of in culture shock. We had a lot of churches on many corners and things just sort of shut down on Sundays. It was pretty much a very conservative, conventional, quiet sort of place.
Lots of, like, a church on every block. Lots of them.
Like, I don't want to sound judgy, because I'm really not, but, like, that does tell you something about a town.
Especially because everything shuts down on Sundays because it's God's Day.
I know. You know, when I was a little kid, there's a lot of things that weren't open on, like, on Sundays and whatever, but, like, the church on every corner is a real... I was like, I don't know that I'd be welcomed in with open arms in a town like this.
Yeah, well, because she's saying it's, like, conservative, it's conventional, it's quiet.
Yeah.
And
I said it sounds both lovely and terrifying.
Yeah, and I was just like, maybe tell your wife a little bit about the place you're moving to.
I know.
And I wonder if, like, you know, it was one of those things where the husband downplayed it because she might hate it. And let's just get her there because Amy's awesome. And, like, Amy gets along with everyone and Amy can make everything work. You know what I mean? Like, Amy's cool.
Get her there.
Amy's great. But, like, let's not put it all on Amy.
Yeah.
Let's just let Amy know, like, so Sunday's going to be tough.
Yeah, Sunday's going to be a quiet day around the house.
Which, look, you know what I mean? Love a nice, quiet little Sunday.
I hate it. I need things to do.
You're out of your mind. I know. I've come a long way.
I know.
And now my weekends are like, don't you fuck with my weekends.
I know.
Do whatever the hell I
do. I need a plan. I need to know exactly what's happening.
In 1997, I was happy being a teacher. I loved my students. You know, Andrew being a police officer and I was a teacher, you know, it just kind of seemed idyllic. Until that day.
Things are going great. And then she says, until that day.
Yeah.
And in that moment, we see a blurred out picture. We see it's like her and her husband and her kid.
Yeah.
And the husband and the kid's faces are blurred. And I was like, what did they do?
Yeah.
Nothing. It turns out nothing.
No.
But we learned why their faces are blurred later. But it was very ominous to me.
Yeah. No, we're talking about a different piece of shit.
Travel. Girl, Talkspace is back.
Yeah, you know, it's always good to talk to someone, especially a professional who knows what they're talking about.
That's the whole thing. I cannot imagine my life without therapy. And
Same.
They say that sometimes people wait until something bad happens to talk to a therapist. Why
No.
wait? If you have that person in your life already, if you're already in that practice, like, you also don't need to be going through a crisis to find value in therapy. Therapy, for me, helps me get centered in my life, helps me, like, figure out my priorities, helps me understand when, like, I'm making a bigger deal out of things than I need to be.
Yeah, and it's just talking it out, getting it out of your head, you know
yes.
what I mean? And I remember back in the old days when therapy would be your entire afternoon because
yes.
you would have to get there, sit there for an hour, and then get home. No. They have very convenient virtual sessions with your licensed therapist. You can do it from the comfort of your own home. You can send messages. You can send videos. Like, if something pops into your head, no more notes app, just send it to the therapist in the app.
It saves you hours, fam. Also, Talkspace can help you with any specific challenges you might be facing. Talkspace is the number one online therapy platform with licensed therapists in over 40 specialties. Get this. We're talking anxiety,
yep.
depression,
yep.
substance abuse,
yep.
relationships issues,
yep.
and much more. LGBTQ people, I'm looking at you.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're not perfect.
Everybody. So as a listener of TCO, you'll get $80 off your first month with Talkspace when you go to Talkspace.com/TCO.
To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com/TCO and get $80 off your first month and show your support for the show.
Yeah, that's Talkspace.com/TCO.
Do it.
Do it. November 9th, 1997.
I went to school on that Sunday morning, probably about 9:30 or so, wearing sweatpants and a t-shirt, you know, long sleeve shirt.
Just hanging around clothes. And it doesn't matter.
Just hanging around clothes.
Just hanging around clothes.
I love that.
Like home clothes. Just hanging out,
that
right?
used to be what I wore all the time.
Like,
to fancy events, to
yeah.
hanging out at home.
And it doesn't matter. But Amy's telling us for a reason. And
yes.
that reason is the patriarchy.
Yes.
Because we will learn what happens. But she's making a point to say what she was wearing.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people seem to think that this matters. We don't.
No.
But I hear why she's saying it.
That I didn't even realize why she was making the point to tell us.
Yeah. She was trying... But the patriarchy. You
know, yeah.
Fuck the patriarchy.
She's like, I was wearing sweatpants and a t-shirt. I'm like, so you're fancy outfit.
Right.
Yeah, so you got dressed
your
up.
Your Sunday clothes.
You're, right.
But she's saying it because I just wonder how many times she was asked what she was wearing.
Of course. Oh, yeah.
The patriarchy. So she doesn't say why she's at school, but there was church going on in the cafeteria, and Amy's not here for that. She's doing extra teacher work.
Can we slow down on that? There's a church on every corner, and even that's not enough for the faithful. They need to take up the cafetorium of the school.
I think it's for the little kids. I think it's for the little ones.
The autocafetorium. They turn into a church for the little kids.
The churchatorium.
The churchateria.
There is something. It's a churchateria. That... If it wasn't a gay dance party bar in the East Village in the 80s that Madonna played at.
Yeah. I want to know that when I said Churchateria, it made Stacey Keenan laugh really hard.
We
learned last week that she's a listener. She has not yet made contact. I just want to know that Churchateria made Stacey Keenan laugh really hard.
Stacey, no pressure to make contact. Why are you saying that?
No, because she was on my two dads and I love that so much.
Hey, step by step. So she, I think it's, the little kid, but also can we, like, being in school on a Sunday is so weird.
Yeah.
I was never at school on a Sunday, but I imagine like doing like play rehearsal or going to a day, like being in school after hours is so odd.
I'll tell you, we are at our office right now and I come to here on the weekends a lot. And even that's weird. Going to your place of work on a weekend, it is a weird thing.
Yeah.
But she seems like she's settling in she sets the scene for us.
The classroom that we were using was basically two classrooms with the wall knocked down in the middle. So it was a large classroom, had two doors. I had both doors locked. I knew people were going to church in the cafeteria, and I didn't want to disrupt them. I also didn't want to invite any disruption. So
she makes the point that she locked the door because she did not want any of the churchgoers coming in and bothering
her. Because they're kids.
Totally.
It's the 9:30 a.m. Sunday school class in the cafeteria.
God, get them while they're young. I mean, I went to church when I was a kid.
But that's
I actually really liked it.
We've discussed this.
I know. I really
like
church.
It feels like we're discussing it weekly now.
Now that I've been really hard on this town with churches on every corner, I should say, like, I fucking loved going to church.
Great.
I kind of miss it.
Okay.
Maybe I'll go back.
I was going to say, New York City does have many
full
a church.
Of churches. Yeah, that's true.
Maybe not on every block like some people, but we have plenty.
I will not rest until New York City has a gay bar in every block. That's my mission. Or at least Hell's Kitchen. Do you know what I mean?
Hell's Kitchen has like four.
On every block, you're absolutely.
If we're doing the radius.
You know what, I nailed it. I'm done. I finished. I'm done. My work is done here.
You're in the right place.
You're right.
So she says she's working quietly in her locked classroom, she says.
Yeah.
And around 10:30, she hears someone rattling at the door, like trying to get in. She like gives it a second. Again, the place is crawling with kids. So she's maybe it was like the equivalent of a wrong number, like trying to get into a room that is locked. Okay.
It would be terrifying if she were alone at the school on Sunday, but thank God these people are here to praise him.
And it's like 10:30 in the morning.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like there's something about
more annoyed than anything else, but she does like wait a few minutes and then goes and checks and
she's
just like
oh, okay.
What
was that?
Weird. But there's nobody there. And then like 15 minutes later, she says she's got to go to the bathroom. I love that she's not going to use the student's bathroom. She goes to the teacher's lounge.
Well, because
the teacher's lounge, by the way, is the most forbidden place you can, like
remember that's a forbidden teacher's lounge. And then you go in it and you're like this.
I know. It's like a conference room, but I would not know because I never went in because I did not want to be killed.
I think when I went in, it was like after hours.
Yeah, totally. The teacher's lounge was like very, very off limits at my high school.
And I, you know, growing up, not being a kid anymore, it's like, I get it. You just want a fucking place to yourself.
Right.
Can I just not be bothered?
You should call it the teacher's room because calling it the teacher's lounge makes it feel like there's like a fancy coffee bar.
Well, like the one at School of Rock.
Yeah.
In the School of Rock, teacher's lounge is like a little cafe.
Totally.
They have like snacks and coffee and like pastries. Like, no. So she walks out of the classroom and the teacher's lounge, whatever, is like 15, 20 feet away. And she explains that the bathrooms were self-contained. So it's like literally two bathrooms next to each other. It's not a big public bathroom with stalls.
Yes.
It was like the bathroom you have in your house, only two of them next to
each other. Yes, exactly.
Right? So she uses the bathroom.
So when I was coming out of the bathroom, there he was with a gun in my face.
There is a guy standing there with a gun in her face, and you're like, shit, that's who tried to get into the...
There are times that I'm, like, at home. Like, the other day, I was in the bathroom brushing my teeth, and I thought I was home alone. I had my headphones in.
Oh,
and
why?
Because I had probably just recently come into the house, and I hadn't taken them out yet or something. I had my headphones in, and I'm brushing my teeth. And then all of a sudden, Daisy is next to me.
Right, and she jumped right at her skin.
So...
she said, what, girl?
She goes, girl.
Oh, I thought she was like, girl.
Girl. I mean, it could have been, But like, my point is, whenever I have a moment like that in my life, like we are talking about her coming out of the bathroom and there's a man with a gun in her face.
Yes.
And we're like, oh shit, that sucks. She must have been terrified. I try in the moments when those kinds of things happen to me, like a jump scare.
Yes.
To realize that like, you do not ever, you're never going to react in a way that you think you're going to react when you're not in the moment. Because it's only when you're in the moment of actual panic that you realize you are not in control. control of anything.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
You are so completely scared out of your... Uh-huh. So, like, that's what she is feeling in the... She opens the door and there's a fucking gun in her face.
Yeah.
And that is, must be the... Like her, the, her, her internal body chemistry changes
right.
in that moment.
You think you're alone. She
yeah.
knew she was alone. And also, it's like the intimacy of being in a bathroom
yes.
and then
yes.
just coming out and sort of... You've just sort of, like, refreshed yourself a little
yes.
and you're, like, ready to go. And then it's, like, this roadblock of terror.
Yep.
So, this asshole was wearing sunglasses and a ski mask, but she could see everything from the nose down. Pretty bad mask, idiot. Keep it up.
I was
Stay
thinking,
stupid,
like, did
morons.
He fold up the bottom part of the mask or something? Because this becomes important later.
Yeah.
She can see his entire face from the nose down.
Yeah.
So,
great.
Like, what?
Keep it up. I'm, you know what?
Keep
I'm
it
saying
up.
Nothing. Keep it up.
You know what I say there? I almost give the guy a hero belt.
Oh, not doing that. Ooh, I don't want to do that.
No.
So, trigger warning, everyone. We're going to get into what happened to Amy. So,
yeah.
the guy tells her to go back into the bathroom.
He had me take off some of my clothes and was telling me what to do to him. After that, he decided to take me to... another classroom that was next to the teacher's lounge, and that's where he continued to rape me.
So she, hearing Amy talk about this is unbelievable because she's so strong and,
yeah.
and everything she says is just so important. And she says, you know, she's furious.
When she's later talking about telling other people or other people's reactions to her when they find out that she's been raped.
Yeah.
She said, the fact that I can tell somebody what happened to me, this horrible, violent thing is summed up in one
yeah.
word is not right. It's mm-hmm. not fair. It does not describe, like,
yes.
we know what that word means, but it does not really tell you what the effect that it
sure.
has on her.
Yeah, the weight
and,
of it.
Yeah, that really, really stuck
yeah.
with me. That,
yeah.
like, that is one of the things that she grapples with. Not only that this horrible thing happened to her,
mm-hmm.
but that we have a word for it that means what it means,
yeah.
but does not at all mean what she actually feels.
Right, because everyone's experience is so different.
Yeah.
So you hear it and you're like, oh, that's awful.
Yes.
And it's, yes, it is awful.
Yeah.
But, like, Amy's experience is so singular to her.
And she also describes that, like, would hear about other women, other people who had been raped, that you instantly feel sorry for them.
Yeah.
And that, like, I mean, it hasn't happened to me, so I don't want to speak for anybody, but, like, she's now gone from the person who has the ability to feel sorry for somebody that this has happened to the person who's being pitied.
Mm-hmm.
And that there is an acceptance to be now being a, quote, victim.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we say survivor,
sure.
but also, like, a victim. And so that, like, Amy is so generous in sharing the full spectrum of
yeah.
like of her experience and what it means. We've seen countless rape victims in these documentaries, and for Amy to, like, take the time to say the word rape is the word that we use to describe what happened to me, but does not,
not
at
enough.
All describe what happened
it's
to me.
It's not enough.
Yeah.
So she's furious, and she explains that he stops and tells her to stay exactly where she is and says, do not come out until I leave.
Yeah.
So eventually, Amy runs out of the room. She sees the custodian.
Yeah.
Tells the custodian what happens, and this guy calls 911, and we hear it.
Yes, this is Tilray School in Rogers.
Yes, sir.
We just had a teacher molested in the bathroom here.
A teacher, sir?
Yes.
Who did it?
We don't know. She went in the bathroom, and someone grabbed her.
Okay. Is the person still there?
Yes. No, I don't know that, but the teacher's here.
Okay. Is she there by the phone?
Could we get a policeman here?
Yes, sir. Get her on the phone.
Just a minute.
Now, I wanted to just, like, take a minute for the custodian here, because he's, like, I mean, custodians are unsung heroes just in general, but, like,
yes.
he is encountered by this very frantic woman, and when we hear the 911 call, he is so calm, and
mm-hmm.
he knows his fucking job right now is to get the police here as fast as possible,
yes.
relay the information. It's a quick moment in the documentary, but I really was like, wow, if it were me, I would be feeling all of her emotions, and I feel like I would be frantic, and he manages to stay calm and do the job.
Yeah. And at the same time, you can hear the appropriate urgency and horror in his voice.
Yes.
Like, he's
yes.
not just relaying information.
Yes.
This woman's emotional.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
you could feel it.
Yeah.
But then, because the dispatcher is like, is she there? Get her on the phone.
Yes.
And Amy's on the phone. And you can hear that she can't even believe what she's saying.
Yes.
She can't. She's still. It just happened.
It's, like, Sunday morning at 11 a.m. or something.
She can't even believe, like, what she's describing. She's like, they're having church in
right.
the cafeteria.
Yes.
Like, it's just so, so heartbreaking to hear her speak about it in moments yeah. after, seconds after, you yeah. know, 90 seconds or something after this life-changing thing happened to her.
Travel down the road, back again. Girl, Chime is back. Look, this is all about building your credit. Once again, I say, where were you, Chime, in my 20s when I had like a 320 credit score?
Yeah, that's not good, everyone.
No, not a good score. It's not like out of 100.
You're not like killing it.
No.
You're not like... So let's talk about the Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card.
Yep.
There are no annual fees, no interest, and no credit check to apply. You can use it everywhere Visa credit cards are accepted. And again, like you were saying, you're building credit using your own money.
That's the whole thing. When you get and use the Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card, you're literally building your credit. That's what it's for.
And you know what? You can get paid up to 2 days early with direct deposit. So with a qualifying direct deposit, you can get access to your money sooner, which is never a bad thing.
We also need to talk about overdraft, Tam, because that's another killer. With Chime, you can overdraft up to $200 without fees with SpotMe when you set up a qualifying direct deposit.
Yeah, you just sign up for that qualifying direct deposit, sign up for SpotMe, and Chime will spot you up to your limit when you make a credit card purchase or cash withdrawal that exceeds your balance. They have your back big time.
I'm telling you, that is really big. And like, lastly, I just have to always say it, you get access to 60,000 fee-free ATMs. So fam, start building your credit, open a Chime checking account with at least a $200 qualifying direct deposit to get started.
Get started at chime.com/TCO.
That's chime.com/TCO.
All right, ready for those mandatory disclosures?
Give it to us.
The Chime Credit Builder Visa credit card is issued by the Bancorp Bank NA or Stride Bank NA, members FDIC. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal and over-the-counter advance fees may apply. Call 1-844-244-6363 for details. Late payment may negatively impact your credit score. Results may vary. Early access to all direct deposit funds depends on payer. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply.
Now we meet Hayes Minor.
Hayes.
He's the retired chief of police. I love this guy.
Hayes is here to really... like run this ship.
And he is one of those investigators who is in it to win it. This happened early in his career. And if he didn't solve it, this would be the thing that like he stayed up nights hating himself for not solving.
Yes. And Hayes also wants us to be able to follow along because he explains everything. Yes. And at first I was like, okay, mansplainer. And then I was like, take it back.
Yeah,
because this could be someone's first true crime documentary.
Absolutely.
This could be someone's first time learning about what a 911 page is or the statute of limitations.
Yes.
And he explains it in a really great way.
Well, so, even I feel like I learned something when he was explaining about the statute of limitations.
Yeah. So at first I was like, okay. But then I was like, hey, you pessimistic jerk. I said to myself, I was like, wait a second.
Pessimistic Patty.
Because it could be someone's first time watching
this.
And he does a great job of making sure that we're following what's happening instead of having to side goop.
Yeah. And he says that like he learns that Amy Harrison had been raped at the school. And he says, obviously, I knew who that was. Because remember, Amy's husband is a police officer in the town. And he's like, she was married to a Rogers police officer. So like, this is like, quote, one of their own.
Right. And so, but he says, I get the 911 page that says 911. He goes, that means don't dilly dally, call right away. And I'm like, got it, Hayes. On top of it. Thank you. So yeah.
He gets in the car. He hustles down to the school. He tells us.
He hauls ass down to the school.
Yeah.
We did everything we could to try to get, you know, whatever kind of forensic evidence there was. You know, there was a rug with one of the assaults had taken place when, you know, took the entire rug. The handrails that went up the stairs where he forced her to go for the second part of the assault, they took the entire handrail.
They took the entire handrail that they passed when he took her to the second room. They just like took the banister off.
Yep.
And now, meanwhile, Amy is at the hospital going through the process of what happens after you're assaulted and the cops are called.
And, you know, she's explaining to us because, like, many of us don't know what happened. Like, what the rape victim goes through next.
When they report it.
Yes, because it's not over when the assault is over. Like, now you've got to go face a battery of doctors and nurses and tell them what happened. They're giving her all kinds of drugs.
Wishing that Olivia Benson's the one walking through the door who knows how to talk to you.
Yes, and, like, you know, she's saying it's, like, drugs to prevent HIV, other sexually transmitted diseases, like, you know.
Getting examined,
like drugs to make sure that she doesn't get pregnant.
Right.
And then she says the rape kit, but, you know, I know we don't use that expression anymore. I think it's now called the sexual assault
evidence kit.
Yeah. But it's her, you know, they're doing what they can to collect the sample so that hopefully they can fucking get this guy someday. But, like, the survivor has to go through this secondary trauma after the trauma of the assault.
And Amy gives a statement to the police, and she tells them everything. She has really good information to tell. And that's not to say that there's good and bad information.
Of course.
Just saying, like, reading everything that Amy said, it's like, oh, my God. And maybe it's because she knew the officer and felt more comfortable because her husband was a cop. We don't know. You know, they're asking her any identifying factors that she might have picked up. And she says,
and he bent down and his head was by mine. And I noticed that he had whiskers, like he hadn't shaved in several days. And they looked kind of strawberry blonde.
I tried to pay attention as much as possible to whatever I could about this person.
I thought it was strange that he had only socks on and no shoes, and his socks were very dirty on the bottom.
Were they?
And his socks were super dirty on the bottom.
Yeah.
And they're like, and the officer's like, okay, well, were they green? Like he'd been walking in grass?
Like, or dirty how?
Or dirty. And she's like brown dirt.
With like leaves on them.
Yeah. Like bitty, she goes, little bitty leaf parts on the soles of his feet. And I'm like, this guy wasn't wearing shoes.
Well, Amy thinks he wasn't wearing shoes so that she wouldn't hear him come in. Like,
yeah,
it, like
of
it would be a softer stride or whatever.
And she says,
this is insane.
He said to her that Amy knew him or that she had seen him around.
The attacker said this to her.
Yeah, like that they know each other, that they had some kind of contact.
And he asks her if she recognizes his voice.
And I'm like, oh, shit, we have to know where this is going, right?
Yeah, but she says, I didn't know his voice. Like, nothing came to mind. My thought here was like, oh, my God, is it her own husband?
He's a cop. This guy's a cop.
I know. Because the husband's face was blurred, I was like, oh, my God.
We don't know. Yeah. But also, and then it's like he was really trying to cover up evidence, no shoes. He took a lot of precautions, no fingerprints.
Yeah.
Then he says to Amy, like, don't you recognize me? We've seen each other before, which is terrifying.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. There was one thing that this guy couldn't control.
Yes.
And at one point,
Amy felt a liquid on her leg and just instinctively, I think, probably wiped it off with her hand and just wiped it across her shirt.
It was not a conscious thing for me to wipe away his semen. I was definitely disgusted. I didn't want him on me.
And he immediately says, what was that? What'd you do?
And he clocks that. He's like, what the hell was that?
Yes.
And it doesn't matter because purposely or not, she got this piece of shit's DNA.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is the headline here.
And Hayes, the cop, is saying, like, as we're talking through all of this stuff, like, how would this guy know so much about what evidence we would collect?
I don't know.
You know?
Right.
Like, clearly this guy's got to be a cop.
Right. So they sent the DNA sample through the system and there's no match.
Right.
But Amy gave him so much information. It's crazy because they do this thing and they are not the first people or only people to do this way of doing sketches. I just think it's very cool.
Yes.
Because they give her like 100 different options of hair types and mustaches, noses, chins.
And they're like, they're actual sketches of like generic like faces, facial structures,
right,
like mustaches. I'd never seen that before. And I was like, oh, so she can mix and match them.
So instead of describing what a chin would look like,
yes,
she can pick which one it looked like out of 100 different sketches and then put it together that way. It's a very cool thing.
I just want to say, too, that Amy makes the point to say that like law enforcement went far and wide. Like they're interviewing everybody in her life, everybody who worked at the school, everybody who lives in the community. And I just wanted to say, like, I hope they're not just doing that for her because she's married to a cop.
I mean,
I want to believe that every victim gets treated this way.
Yeah, me too. One day.
But they are really doing the legwork on her behalf here.
Yeah. And there's a witness that says they saw a guy leaving in a blue pickup truck.
Yes.
And they have Little Rock run a search for this truck.
Yeah.
And later that night, someone like finds the truck.
But like, they're not specific here because there wasn't a license plate. They have Little Rock, the city of Little Rock run, like, who are people who have blue pickup trucks in this neighborhood or whatever, and they find one and they go to the house and they like it ends up being an old man who was nowhere near the school.
Yeah, it's not our guy.
He doesn't fit the description at all. And you know, and Hayes is just saying like this, it's demoralizing because you think we're going to get the guy. We really want to get the guy. We think this is going to be the guy, and it's not him.
And then it's sort of like it happens so fast and, oh, do we have momentum now? And then it's just like a brick wall.
Yeah.
So over the next few weeks, the cops are trying to chase leads and match the DNA. And as this is happening, Amy is processing what happened to her.
Yeah. And this is the whole part where she's just saying how, like, in the beginning, she couldn't even say the word rape.
Yeah. And she was really struggling. And her marriage is suffering because her husband, she explains, that as a cop, he was like so frustrated and guilty that, like, this is his job, right?
Yes.
Like, he was supposed to protect her. This is what his feelings are. And, like,
yes,
he couldn't do it.
Yeah, and she's like,
this event having an emotional impact, a sexual impact. That was for both of us the kiss of death on our marriage. You know, I mean, sometimes I just needed a hug. Sometimes I
just needed space. Sometimes I needed to just scream in a pillow and beat something up with a bat.
The communication between her and her husband just breaks down. He's blaming himself.
Yeah.
She can't communicate.
And she says on top of that, like, she had
and
a
I'm
very...
not blaming her for not being able to communicate, obviously.
No, but she also has, like, a very different relationship to sex now.
Yes.
Like, all of the... Amy's not alone in any of this.
Of
like,
course.
All of these are just like, yep, that makes complete sense.
But this was a long time ago. This was... What year was this?
1995.
So, like, this was not... This was before we were talking about it out loud. This was before there was, like, social media where you could go and look for other survivors. Like, I think that Amy feels very alone.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's hard to process, and he's so angry, and he should be angry. There's a lot of anger, I think, coming from everyone, and a lot of confusion and a lot of trauma. And like, their relationship just kind of fell apart because of it.
And that's why the picture is blurred out, because he's not here. You know, this is very much Amy's story. He's not a part of it. So that, like, with the blurred out picture and that very ominous moment, I was like, what did you do?
Yeah.
But it's not that.
And it doesn't seem to me like he walked out. It seemed like they really tried for a really long time, and it just wasn't working anymore. And that's what happens when someone goes through a trauma sometimes, you know, like, no one's at blame here.
Amy is also describing that, like, she, after a couple weeks, she goes back to teaching, and that, like, there's no way around it. People in the school, students and teachers, know what happened.
Right.
You know? And Amy just, like, talks about the struggles of, like, facing her life. Like, what a thing for people to know about you.
Right. And Amy's just kind of starting to, like, as she's working through what happened to her, she's starting to think of the idea, like, maybe this case won't be solved. Like, there's no DNA match. Like, they're testing hundreds of people. Like, it's just kind of going nowhere. And, and on top of the days, weeks, months, years it's going to take her to just fully process it, and whatever that timeline is, on top of it, it's like, and maybe I'll never know.
Right, right. And this is where Hayes, the cop, says to us that,
he,
like,
we're out on his boat and he's explaining the statute of limitations.
Which he explained it to me in a way that I hadn't really understood it before. He's saying, you know, this was 1997 and the laws of the state were really different back then. And we learned that, like, this is a class Y felony, rape is, and that all class Y felonies, there's a statute of limitations for 6 years.
After a certain length of time, that case can no longer be prosecuted, okay? And it starts when law enforcement finds out about the case, right? So on the day that this happened, the clock starts ticking for us, and meaning that in 6 years, if we did not bring this case to a closure or have an active warrant for the suspect, then we could not prosecute him, even if we found out who it was.
After 6 years, like, if in year seven, the guy comes forward and said, I did it, I committed that rape, they still can't prosecute him.
Yeah.
If he comes and admits what happened, if they find out who did it, when the statute of limitations is up, they cannot prosecute that person anymore.
And he says, like, if they don't solve the case or have an active warrant for a suspect, they cannot prosecute even if they find out who he is.
And we'll get into that in a second. Can someone explain to me why? Why do we have a statute of limitations?
I don't know.
You know what I mean? Like, I understand, I guess there are some crimes for which a statute of limitations makes sense, but for something like rape, can we just get the guy when we get the guy?
Especially now that, like, we know about DNA and science and it's always evolving.
And he does say
the fact that people don't report things for years or maybe ever for this fucking reason.
But, you know, Hayes says that, like, the laws were different then. He doesn't say how they have changed and what they are now, so maybe it's not the case there anymore in Arkansas.
Yeah.
But, like, I will not understand murder, rape, why do we have statutes of limitations on these things?
Yeah.
Sexual assault. Sexually, we would run into this with, like, the kids that were molested by priests or whatever,
you know what I mean?
Who, like, were too young to even know sometimes that it had happened until many years later.
Right, which is why, like, the Spotlight article was such a huge thing, because it gave them something. But also, I was like, a class Y felony, as in, like, the second to last letter of the alphabet? Like, are there 25 classes Y?
Yeah.
No, I Googled, thank God.
Oh, really?
No, Y is actually the most, it's like Y... A, B, C, D in Arkansas. And I was like,
you know what? Let's start with why. I think we should start with why. Don't ask me why.
But immediately, don't ask me why.
Don't ask me why.
Hey, why?
Yeah.
Watch it.
Why not?
But when he said a class Y felony, I was like, oh God.
Yeah.
What are the 25? Like, what else is before?
What's like a class N felony?
Like, what?
You know?
No, but it's another weird thing that's like, cool, way to make it complicated for no fucking reason.
Yeah.
In 1997, and this is still the case today, that the statute of limitations on rapes and class Y felonies is 6 years.
Well, Hayes has got a pretty interesting workaround.
Because now it's 2003.
Yes.
Right? And so the cops, it's 5 years later. The cops do something very cool.
Yes.
So Wisconsin pioneered the John Doe warrant.
I gotta give Wisconsin lots of credit last year or whatever year. We won that Supreme Court seat and they helped us win the election. Wisconsin, I love ya.
I'm gonna explain what it is and then I'm gonna give you my side goof that I learned about.
Oh.
So what the John Doe DNA warrant is, if you have biological evidence that narrows the crime down to one person and one person only, like Amy does.
And you don't have a name for the person, but
you
the
just
DNA,
have the DNA.
It just means that, like,
if we match this person, we know who did it, right?
Exactly.
Amy has that.
And you can then issue a warrant for a person with the matching DNA of, you know, put the sequence out there on the actual warrant, and therefore you stop the statute of limitations.
And that puts an end to the statute of limitation because that gives you an active arrest warrant.
Yes.
Because you can have the active arrest warrant and the bada bing, bada boom, the minute there's a match, you're done,
because
right?
technically it is a warrant for a person. We just don't have the person's name
yet. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So
that is incredible, Wisconsin. Wait.
That's
a full-on hero bell.
The guy's name, it's a prosecutor. I Googled. I was like, who came up with the John Doe thing?
Oh, wow.
It's really interesting. His name, he's a prosecutor named Norman Gahn, and he came up with this. And he's an innovator when it comes to, like, using DNA, even starting in, like, the 80s, and especially in sexual assault cases. He was talking about it back in the 80s. Think about that, right? He was the first recipient of the Lifetime Legal Innovator Award given out by the State Bar of Wisconsin.
Hear a bell, Norman. Norman Gahn?
Norman Gahn. Prosecutor Norman Gahn.
Yes, Norman.
He was like, well, this was a nice surprise. Like the quote in the Wisconsin Bee was like, I was not expecting this, but thank you so much. But he really pioneered, and it was DNA. Just look him up. It's like the articles I read about what he did specifically to, like, pioneer this John Doe warrant is fucking amazing.
That is a really, really great, because, like, just to really drive it home, if you don't have an active warrant after 6 years, you can't ever prosecute. But and this guy's idea,
and like 6 years in one day, you can match it, and it still doesn't matter.
I love that
crazy.
He just, like, sat up in the middle of the night and was like, "Eureka!"
In like 1989.
Yeah, because it makes sense if the DNA only points to one person and one person only. Just
it makes complete sense.
Yeah, and so they do it in this case. I love that the prosecutor and the judge are like, "Fuck yes, Norman Gahn,
let's go."
Yeah.
Travel down the road back again.
Girl, Prize Picks is back. Fam, Prize Picks is America's number one fantasy sports app with over 3 million members, including me. I know you don't believe it, but I've actually done this. I've actually played the game.
Yeah, it's kind of more fun if you don't care that much.
Hey, we got that big Taylor Swift football game coming up. What's going on?
Yeah, the Super Bowl is here. The Eras Tour Super Bowl version is here right around the corner. So Prize Picks is the easiest and most exciting way to turn every game-changing moment into 100 times your money. And with as little as 4 correct picks, you can turn $10 into $1,000.
That expires post-Taylor Swift Super Bowl. So get in on that for that big Taylor Swift game, which is what I'm going to just keep calling it.
Football Taylor's version. And Prize Picks even offers injury insurance because this is, like, based on real people, obviously, right?
Yeah.
So your entries stay in play even if one of your players gets injured. And for football and basketball games, if you have a player who exits the game in the first half and does not return in the second, that player projection won't count against you and the rest of your entry stays alive. So what I'm hearing is
What does any of that mean?
It's working all in your favor.
Oh,
don't worry
it.
About it.
Here's my favorite talking point, because this is true, because if this wasn't true, I never would have been able to play this. Prize Picks is really simple to play, fam. I can make my picks and submit my entry in less than 60 seconds, which I did, knowing nothing going
exactly. They have quick withdrawals, they have easy gameplay, and there's an enormous selection of players and stat types, and that's what makes Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app.
So fam, go to prizepicks.com/obsessed and use code obsessed for the first deposit match up to $100.
Yeah, go to prizepicks.com/obsessed and use code obsessed for a first deposit match of up to $100.
Fam, pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
It is so easy.
I can't wait for Taylor Swift's big day.
Oh my God. Is she going to go? She has to fly from Tokyo. It's a whole thing.
Oh God.
So now we're in Gateway, Arkansas, 18 miles north of Rogers. You can still shoot guns in the city limits, but it's pretty quiet.
Whoa.
Yikes.
You can still shoot your guns in the city limits.
But
well,
it's quiet.
God.
It's a nice, quiet little town. Andrew J. Tillman Jr. is the mayor of Gateway, Arkansas. Crime doesn't exist here, apparently. And he goes, unless it's somebody from somewhere else. And I'm like, right, but you don't have, like, a force field around the town, right? Like, anyone can come and go at any time, meaning that you could have crime. Okay, great.
Oh, my God. I would also love to see that mayoral race. Like, what was his stump speech?
Ran unopposed. You know, definitely ran unopposed. The point is, the town of Gateway only had one police officer.
Should I move to Gateway and run for mayor? Absolutely just
not.
To make it a race?
Absolutely not.
You don't think so?
This guy's
on the
got,
rent's too damn high ticket.
He does not need anything else on his plate, this guy, okay?
Yeah. Okay. No, you're right. I should just stay where I am.
I think
Should I run for mayor of New York City?
Absolutely not.
Do you know that Daisy told me the other day that she's only not running for mayor because she's got to go to school? Other
you know
than
what,
that,
Daisy,
she would be
it.
Running for mayor.
We need something. We are in need of some help here.
It's true. It's true.
Please, God. So the point is,
yeah,
the town of Gateway only had one police officer.
Yes.
And his name is Grant Hardin, and he was the chief of police and the constable, which basically means he ran everything, like state, federal, minor issues, big issues. He did it all, this Grant guy.
We meet his wife, Linda, who I love. She's taking us through the house. And I'm like, is Grant dead? Where is Grant?
Grant's not here, but there are photos of him up the wazoo. All of his accomplishments, like his high school photos still on the wall, his badges, his awards. They're also like the church photos, which look like yearbook photos, only it's everyone in the family and it's for the church, but they're in Linda's home. Like, are the halls of the church lined with these photos?
I mean, all I know is that there's a church on every corner.
They have the same blue background as the yearbook photos.
I know. Look, there's a lot of church walls to fill. You know what I mean?
I guess so.
Every corner, not a gay bar in sight.
Not a single one.
Not a single gay bar.
You know who are soulmates?
Who?
Linda and Grant.
Do you know what I would call the gay bar if I made one in Gateway?
The church yearbook
photo? I'd call
it
church.
Church.
You know what I mean?
Let's go to church.
You and me wake up on a Sunday morning, we go straight
to
church.
But that's why I was saying, like, Churchateria. How is that a place on Avenue A?
Stacey Keenan just started laughing again.
Yeah. Like 8th and A, where that Madonna used to dance at back in the day.
Yeah.
Churchateria.
Absolutely. Churchateria.
She used to dance at cafeteria.
It's a church at cafetorium.
And danceateria.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Linda and Grant were soulmates. Grant was a gentleman, always protecting her. They had one hell of an amazing marriage.
They really did. And then Linda tells us,
I had Madison. She was a miracle baby because I was 46 when I had her.
Linda had her when she was 46.
Yeah.
I used to work at a daycare.
Yeah.
Like, before I opened my daycare for a week, I worked at a daycare for a little while. And the woman who worked there, her mother, the woman whose daycare it was, her mother had her when she was 49.
Wow.
49. Fremy's mom was 49.
Wow.
When she had Fremy. Isn't that crazy?
That is.
Yeah. Also, Madison is here. She's the cutest kid. Madison was talking about, like, she loved her dad. Her dad was a cop. She thought that was so cool. It made, like, her, like, a little celebrity in the town that her dad was, like, the chief of police.
And I'm like, when is the other shoe going to drop? It's hanging right over my head. The piano is dangling by a thread, and it's going to come crashing down any second.
You cannot pull one over on UGP. Cannot do it.
Everything's too, like,
I know.
Because
I keep trying to be like, who's the bad guy? Like, is the ex-husband who's the bad guy here?
Yeah, I'm waiting also, for everything so perfect. Like,
and
what?
Grant's not here, and we haven't been told that he's dead. So, like, what's going on?
So, Grant wasn't that great.
No.
Because we learned, you know, he was a big guy physically, and he kind of used that. Like, he was very imposing, and he loved, like, super toxic masculinity, right? Like, he never needed any backup, because he was the only cop, and he was big enough to, like, deal with it himself, and all right,
he also worked, quote, deep nights, meaning I think that he just, like, is that how you say it? Paroled?
Patrolled.
I don't know what happened. I could not make my... I knew it wasn't the right word.
You're on parole.
You're on parole.
And you patrol.
But you do patrol.
But he was just, like, not sleeping. He was just up, like, trying to be a tough badass, got prove his manhood or whatever the fuck.
He just, like, loved being the chief of police, and he was really a dick about it.
Because he was in charge, and he had all the power, and he was... We'll get into that in a minute.
Yes.
But let's meet John Bray. John Bray has the weight of the world on his shoulders. This poor guy, he's got a story to tell.
All he wants to do is run his iron shop, and he runs a cattle farm or whatever as well. He seems sweet as pie.
Bray's iron shop, he's lived here his whole life, and I'm just like, Bray,
I know.
Like, let it out, girl. I just feel for him immediately.
These,
like,
people,
what's going on?
I will say, like, everybody we meet is so nice.
Yeah.
Like, these people are so kind. It's February 23rd, 2017.
Totally normal day.
He's driving home from a job, like, fixing a fence or something.
Yeah, he's heading home.
He's, like, driving down the road, and he sees these two cars parked on the side of the road.
So probably within 100 yards after I had passed the truck, I heard what I thought was someone had fired a rifle.
And when he's like 100 yards past the two cars, he hears a gunshot. And this is where we learn that someone named James Appleton has been killed.
Yes.
The gunshot was to kill James Appleton.
James Appleton, who we've not met yet, but we learned that he was just a man around the town. He was a public water operator.
Yeah, his sisters are here.
Yes.
Cheryl and Sharon, and there are five siblings altogether. He worked for the city.
Yeah.
Doing like water and maintenance work and road work.
And like just now, he's been shot in the head. We hear the 911 call. The sheriff is back, the guy who I was going to run against, but he ran unopposed. You told me I should not move there and run against him.
Yeah. And then we meet this guy, Hunter. He's a lieutenant for the sheriff's office. And so John, so now it's like, okay, all we hear right now is that like John Bray makes the 911 call because he drove by these two cars. That's kind of weird. Here's the gunshot. So now he's sitting down with the cops and John Bray tells them absolutely everything. He's the best witness they ever could have in this situation.
Everybody, yes.
And now we get into the details of what happens, right? So he's driving home. He sees these two cars, a white car parked behind a truck. The white car is flagging people around. Like when you're parked on the side of the road, like go around, nothing to see here. We like also, I'm having car trouble.
We see the actual road and I'm like, they're pulled on to the grass. You don't need to tell the people to drive past you. Like, you would just naturally do that.
And I think it's one of those small towns where someone's just bound to stop and be like, how can I help?
Yeah, what's going on?
Guy's just like, whoever's sitting behind the truck is like, no, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
So John is flagged around and he's driving by and he looks into the truck and it's James Appleton.
Yes.
And James is on the phone.
And he knows James.
And they do that little wave where you're on the phone, you can't talk.
Yes.
Like, hi.
Yeah.
And John keeps driving. Now, James Appleton, our victim here, was on the phone with Andrew, the mayor of the town.
Yes.
And we know
this. And he's like, do you think that Heinz character is going to come down here and run against me?
And they're like, not a chance. So James Appleton, our victim, is calling to report this other car on the road that's flagging everybody down.
Yes.
Because it doesn't look right.
Right.
And so as James Appleton is on the phone, James was narrating the whole thing to the mayor.
James on the phone, when he called me, he says, there's that car sitting behind me and he's not moving. And then James says, well, they're easing on up now, on up, you know, beside him. And then that's when I heard it sound like his truck door slammed. That's what it sounded like on the phone.
That car pulls up next to him and shoots him in the head.
Now, remember, our witness, John Bray, with the weight of the world on his shoulders, is 100 yards away.
Yes.
He hears the gunshot. He just saw his friend, James.
It's like whoever is the shooter here was not trying to get away with it.
Really?
Like, it's like broad daylight, shoots the guy in the head on the side of the road. There was just a witness that drove right. Like, this guy is going to get caught.
He's just enraged. He's not thinking.
Yes.
Like, no one's thinking. So John files a report and tells the cops everything.
Right. He knows who the guy is in the car.
We get this wild exchange where the cops are like, well, do you know what type of car it was? And John goes, are you kidding? I know where the guy lives.
Right.
And the cops are like, I'm sorry.
Right.
Wait a second. You know who did this? And
yes.
John's like, yeah, I grew up with him. I can take you to him right now.
Right. His name is Grant Hardin.
Grant Hardin.
He lives right there. So remember Linda with the miracle baby and like the amazing husband
he's
who's the chief
police
of police?
Chief and the constable, the amazing person. Yeah, he's not such a great guy.
No.
So let's rewind. After becoming Gateway's chief of police in 2016, Grant Hardin's behavior changes completely. He starts to become a real dick.
So this is a year before the shooting.
He was the worst kind of cop.
Yes, he's like he's just a bully.
He oversteps his authority. He carried a gun on duty, off duty. If a car would make him mad, if he was driving, he would pull up next to him and show him his gun.
He was out chasing cars for no reason. He was pulling guns on the citizens here in Gateway.
He had like road rage incidents. He was just looking for fights and he was a dick.
Here's my question though. What was his behavior like before he was chief of police? Like, why would you vote him in?
It had to be kind of similar. Maybe he did that masking thing where it's like he was kind of great. Or who wants to be in charge of the whole town?
I guess that's true.
Idiot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm sure some of it, or some people maybe saw it as like, he's just such a good protector. He's just so aware. But once he actually had like the two badges where he was in charge of everything, then he just went wild.
So, and we learned that in spring of 2016, Hardin, the shooter, had a run-in with James Appleton, the victim.
Right.
It's a little unclear, but basically, like, Hardin was, like, sort of joyriding one of the police cars, like, in the middle of the woods and, like, wrecks the undercarriage of the police car.
Like, off-road. Like, he wasn't on a road. Like,
right.
He just wrecked the car. All this, like, brush and grass and, like, sticks and shit, like, got into the car.
Right.
So, and then he just, like, demanded that James fix it. And
so, like, I guess James Appleton, like, he's kind of the handyman around town.
Yeah.
So I guess, like, he takes the car to Appleton, and Appleton says to him, I'm not going to fix this for you because you're, like, a hooligan out there doing shenanigans.
Well, I'm not going to do something for you for free because you're screaming at me because you destroyed your car because you were an idiot.
That was unclear to me. They were asking him to fix the car for free?
I think.
Because I'm kind of like, why would Appleton, a job's a job. Why would he say no?
No, I think Grant was like, I'm the police officer and you gotta do what I say. Right. Or fucking whatever. and James Appleton rightly was like, no.
No, yeah.
Like, you have to pay me for my, I think that's what it was. That he was just.
That makes much more sense to me. That was not made clear in this moment in the documentary.
That's what I gathered from it. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong.
It must be that because Appleton says no and like sends him away. And the police chief, Hardin, is like,
he doesn't like that.
You fucking talking to me, bro?
You don't say no.
No.
You know, so Grant is the only one who could have any power. James stood up to him. He doesn't like that. Narcissists never like that shit.
Nope.
So from that day on, Grant had it out for James. So James like put up a boundary and now there's a target on this guy's back.
So like I would be thinking if I'm James and I'm sitting in my truck on the side of the road and Hardin pulls up behind me and I got the mayor on the phone, I would kind of be more like, I'm a little afraid.
Yeah.
And James does not say that to the mayor.
And I don't think he knows that it's Hardin behind him. He can't.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll tell you why I think that in a minute.
Okay.
I'll tell you right now, because
the city council made an offer to him. Either he resigned or he was going to get fired.
He harbored resentment totally.
Either resign or you're fired.
Yeah, and so, he had only been police chief for 4 months when this happened.
And this is Arkansas. They let the cops do whatever they want down there.
You gotta be a real piece of work.
Whoa. Yeah. But Grant Hardin, once again, was furious. Like, he's mortified, he's resentful, he's very angry. So I think, like, James didn't know it as, like, the chief of everything's car. It was just, like, a car.
Yeah.
You know?
And the murder is 9 months later. So he's police chief. He has the run-in with James Appleton. 4 months later, he's fired. And 9 months later, he kills James Appleton.
Right. Now we're back to February 23rd, 2017.
The day of the murder.
Right. And so Grant Hardin is out doing, like, yard work.
Yeah.
And he comes into the house.
We get the backstory of, like, what led up to the murder.
Yeah. Like, he comes into the house and he tells his wife and daughter, you know what? We're going out. We're going to Chili's or whatever. No shade to Chili's. I love restaurant. Oh, send me to Applebee's, please.
We go to the Cheesecake Factory, like, once a month at
least. Are you kidding me?
I know.
Love it. But I'm just saying, like, he's going to take them out to eat. And he's like, but you know what? Take your time. There's no rush. Like, I just had this idea. Like, I've done that to Mike before where it's like 3 p.m. It's like, do you want to go out to dinner later?
Totally.
Let's like, okay, that'll like be the plan for the rest of the day and like we'll have dinner at 7. Like that kind of thing.
Yes.
Only not as cute.
Right.
So he's like, no rush. So they're in their house. Like Linda and Madison are like taking their time just like Grant said they could. He's in the front yard and then suddenly like a freaking bat out of hell, he's in the car and he's leaving.
Yeah. And like the mayor tells us, trying to piece together like what the hell happened. He's like, the only thing I can figure is that James, the guy who wouldn't fix the car.
James left by Harding's house. Harding had to been outside, but I don't think he had time to go in and get a gun and stuff, so it looks to me like that he probably was in his car, and then when he seen James go by, then he takes out after him.
We know that Mr. Hardin was outside working in the yard, so it's, you know, easily could have happened.
And Hardin sees James drive by, and for whatever reason, this is the moment that Hardin, like, loses his mind.
Because he would do this.
Yes.
He would chase people down.
Yes.
And he always had a gun on him, and he would, like, go out looking for fights. So it's not that far-fetched that he was like, that's that motherfucker who wouldn't fix my car that I destroyed.
And the mayor is also like, we also know that Hardin always had guns everywhere, so he definitely, like, didn't have to go into the house to get the gun that he killed
James. No, it's the car gun.
It's the car gun.
You know what I mean?
What they're saying is, like, Hardin jumps in his car. He's like, I'm going to take you guys out to dinner. BRB jumps in his car, starts chasing James Appleton down the road.
Right. So then he shoots and kills James Appleton.
Broad daylight, dinner plans in an hour.
And comes back within 10 minutes.
Yes.
Because Linda's like, suddenly there was a major rush to get to dinner. Like, he said to take our time, and then suddenly it's like, nope, we have to go this minute.
But, which is also confusing to me, because it's like, so the mad rush wasn't to get out of town and try to get away with this. For some reason, like, he knows he's going to get caught, right? Like, if he's like, he's not trying to escape. He's just trying to not be home when the cops come.
Because then he leaves the murder car at home. They take the other car to dinner.
But he's not trying to flee. So I said to you before we started recording, I had like a thought about this.
Yeah, yeah.
This reminded me of the Aaron Hernandez documentary.
Uh-huh.
Remember, like, Aaron Hernandez was the football player that had that traumatic brain injury situation that made him super, super violent.
Yes.
And he killed those guys who like bumped into him at the club. Like, he followed them out of the club and then drove, like, literally pulled up next to them in the car and shot into the car and killed them both. this feels like that. Like, it feels like there's something wrong with this guy. Like,
there
is. It feels like this is not even a quote, normal murderer situation.
Right.
Like, something in him was broken.
I think for whatever reason, he blamed James Appleton for him getting fired.
Yes.
Or forced to resign. Like, he just had, like, a thing for James. It was a target. He became obsessed with hating him.
Yeah.
And I think he was like, here's my fucking chance. I can't take it anymore. I have to kill him.
It was weird to me that there was so much urgency to get the women to the restaurant, but not like him to like flee the town.
And then when they're at dinner, he's like super lovey.
Yeah.
And he's saying goodbye.
Oh my God. He's literally like, Madison is like,
I just remember he kept saying, I love you. I love you. I love you to both of me and my mom.
And he made several statements to them that certainly in hindsight were prescient, because he said, look, if we don't see each other anymore, just always know that I love you and things like that. So looking back, you can see that he was already working out in his mind that this was not going to work out.
He was like taking them out for one last meal, basically.
It's just like, what is going through his mind at this point?
Yeah, he knows he's caught.
Yeah.
But like, that didn't matter. He had to win over James Appleton. So while the family's at dinner, the cops already know that Grant Hardin killed James Appleton because their best friend, John Bray, brought them to the house, essentially.
Eight people live in this town. They all know each other.
They all know each other.
Yeah.
Exactly to your point that this was just a rage-fueled.
Yes.
Like, it was just like his body just did this horrible thing.
It's weird,
and
too.
I'm not saying that to take any blame from him.
No,
I'm not saying,
of course,
he couldn't help it.
Of course.
I think he's just a bad guy, and he snapped, and he was like, James Hardin, I think, became like a vehicle for all of his hatred and embarrassment and jealousy and all this stuff.
Yeah, and it's like, the cops aren't even out looking for him yet. They're still at the crime scene, like, trying to gather evidence or whatever. And, like, Hardin and his family are on their way home from dinner, and there's a traffic checkpoint because they're looking for they're not looking for him, but they're, like, not going to let him leave town
either. It's the same road. He has to drive by the crime scene to get home.
He's literally driving by the crime scene, and the cop stops him and asks his name, and he gives him his name, and they're like,
come with us.
Could you please come with us, murderer?
Like, and so we see the entire.
I know. I mean, it's all very calm.
And this is, I don't know if this was shade or a dig, but I was like, ooh, narcissist doesn't like that one. Because they're like,
I know. Did you used to be a police officer somewhere? Or I recognized you, but I wasn't 100% sure where I knew you from. But somebody said that you used to be a police officer in Gateway or?
And a constable.
You were a constable here too? For Bend County?
Yeah.
Yes.
Were you the police chief?
Yes.
I can't place where you are. And something about, like, not being recognized.
I know.
I'm sure killed him.
That's what the cop says. Because, like, just to give you the timeline, he was police chief for 4 months, 9 months ago.
Right.
So, like, whoever the cop is now in this tiny little town is either pretending
Do
not
I
to
know
him
you?
Or he's... Yeah, it was very... I thought I have the same
loved
note.
It, yeah, right?
Yeah.
Whether intentional or not, loved.
Yeah.
So the cops want... They're like, we know you did it. You got to tell us everything. And now he's a cop, right?
Right.
And he's like, no, I have to... He literally says, I have to remain silent. I'm not saying anything.
And it's funny, too, because I was like, it's amazing the number of times killers actually get away with it just by remaining silent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Except for this,
like,
guy.
It's a roll of the dice. He's like, I'm probably not going to get away with it, but you never know.
It could buy me an hour or two.
Right.
And the cops are like, okay, that's great, but it didn't matter because we have all this evidence against you.
Yeah,
so you can remain silent, but I'm putting these handcuffs on you because you are under arrest for the murder of James Appleton. Now, John Bray is the eyewitness. And he's like, there's enough based on everything he said and just what he knows from growing up in this town. Like, there's enough to get, like, we have Grant Hardin, like, he's done.
Totally.
But the one thing they do is collect his DNA.
Right. And they put his DNA into CODIS, and, like, there's instantly a hit for a crime in another town.
For an unsolved crime. And this is where I am, like, jumping out of my seat.
So this was where I had to Google how far Rogers, Arkansas, where Amy lives, is from Gateway, Arkansas. It's 17 miles.
There you go.
It's a 22-minute drive.
So, like, you can see where this is going. I'm screaming.
Yes.
My hair, like, it's crazy, right?
Yes.
So we go back to Hayes Minor, the guy who explains everything.
Yeah, the officer.
He was working Amy Harrison's case, the sexual assault case from the beginning.
Yep.
He gets in his car. He gets a phone call.
And he called, and he just said, we got him. And I'm like, are you saying what I think you're saying, Dave? We got him. And he goes, you're never going to believe who it was, and says it was Grant Hardin.
And Dave goes, we fucking got him.
And
Dave goes, and guess what? You're not going to fucking believe who it is.
I know.
And he goes, who? Grant Harden. And Hayes is like, how do I know that name? Yep. How do I know that name? And Dave's like, girl, it's the chief of police.
From Gateway.
Hayes cannot handle it.
I know.
He was like, I was in meetings with him. Like, did I shake his hand? I hope I didn't touch the guy. Yeah. Like, I knew him.
He's like, I knew him. And he's just like, Hayes doesn't say it explicitly, but like, Harden is just the kind of guy you just get fucking bad vibes from. You know what
totally.
I mean?
Totally.
The definition of the man you always talk about, the guy at the bar who you always want to know
always
where
have
he
an
is.
Eye on.
So like, Hayes instinctively knew he didn't fucking like this guy.
Yeah.
The guy, like, also, like, if you're a police officer like Hayes in a neighboring town where the police chief in the other town gets fired after 4 months, of course you know this guy.
Right, and because he was terrorizing everyone anyway.
Yes.
So I just love that back and forth because Hayes is cursing a lot.
I know.
I wasn't adding that. Yeah. Like, he was saying, like, it was amazing.
But we learned that at the time of Amy's rape, remember Harden, who we now know as the rapist, was like, do you remember me? Do you know me? Do you recognize my voice? And Amy is saying to us, like, there is no connection between Grant Harden and Amy, her family, the school, the community, even. Like, she didn't know him.
But it speaks to the fact that he thought everyone did know him.
Yes.
Because
he
was the big man about town.
Yeah.
And it just shows, like, he was sick.
Yes.
Like, he's a disgusting piece of shit.
And Amy gets the call and she tells us, like, she was in her living room. She just, like, jumps off the couch. She's like, there's going to be closure for her. She's going to know who this was and that guy's going to be brought to justice.
Right. So 21 years later, Amy is called in to make a photo ID.
Right. Remember, she did the sketch with all the different facial features.
Right, and he had a mask that only covered his eyes, but she knew what he looked like from the nose down.
Nose down, yeah.
So they ask Amy to look at 12 driver's licenses.
Yeah.
And she does this thing where she puts her thumb on. I'm going to start crying.
I know.
I've just put my thumb over each driver's license head, you know, so that I could see from the nose down. And out of, like, 9, 12 faces, I was able to pick his out.
Having seen half his face 21 years earlier, she picked the son out. If that's not attention to detail, I don't know what is.
Of the 12 pictures that she saw, she picked him right out.
And
18 years later.
21.
21 years later. Oh, yes. 2018, 21 years later.
Right. And so Hayes, like, says to us, and he does his face, and he goes, 21 years later, and she picked out that son of a bitch.
Yeah, yeah.
And he kind of looks like she's awesome.
Yes, yes.
Like, he gives us this amazing face that's like,
the hero belt for Amy.
Like, there's nothing more to say, right?
Yeah.
Like, she's just a fucking hero. Like, a little nod and eyebrow raise. Like, she got that son of a bitch.
Yep. And Hayes is so, I mean, this is the case that keeps him up at night.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he is so
years.
Gratified to know that there's going to be closure and fucking justice in this case.
And what was this piece of shit doing for 21 years?
I know.
What was he, a nice guy, except for those two times? No. Like, there are probably many other things that he did that he got away with.
Either didn't get reported or there wasn't DNA left.
And,
yeah.
And Amy said, like, I didn't know him through my husband, but I knew he was law enforcement because he knew how to get away with it. He knew how to hide evidence.
Yes.
Like,
he knew not to touch things. That's why he came in his stocking feet.
Right. And he was just like, he didn't like that she touched his DNA.
Yes.
Like, he was all over it. But, like, this guy is evil because he knew that Amy had his DNA and he was still, like, parading around as this great protector and, like, abusing his power.
17 miles away. You know what I mean? Like, he knows this crime happened in this other town. Right. Like, he's the ultimate perpetrator hiding in plain sight.
Right.
And he's, like, parading himself around like the great protector.
It's unbelievable.
I know.
So he killed James Appleton. He abused Amy Harrison. And he pleaded guilty to both of those crimes, right?
Yeah.
And he's serving 50 years in prison. So, bye.
Yeah, bye.
But we end with the families and with Amy. So, like, James's family is devastated. And there are a lot of feelings here.
Oh, of course. Because, like, Linda is, like, here to say, like, my husband was a piece of shit. I just didn't know.
Yeah. And then James, the murder victim's family, is like,
I felt glad that they had found the person that did this to her. But in the meantime, too, I felt sad that it took my brother's life to find this person that did this. It took my brother to get his DNA.
It took their loved one's murder to get the DNA to get to this point. So, like, that's always going to be sad and complicated and hard for them.
Yes.
And Amy is going through newspaper clippings, and she's like, oh, here's me when he got sent to prison.
Yeah.
Here I am hugging the prosecutor. She's, like, adorably giddy at her justice that she got. And I just thought this was, like, so well done. And I just, like, I love Amy, and I just, my heart goes out to James's family. So this was a really great doc.
It was really good.
Good, right?
Well, yeah, when you all are asking us what are docs we love, this is
this one. Is a great one.
Yes.
They ticked a lot of boxes of things that we should be doing in this world. You know?
I agree.
There you go.
Oh, girl. girl, we did. What's it called?
Devil in the Ozarks.
Oh, God, it was crazy.
Really crazy.
Fam, quick reminder, I am going on tour in March. This is the last time I'm ever doing the book party. So this is it. There's five more shows. I do have other things like lined up down the road for the summer and the fall. But like, if you want to see the book party, which I love, it's coming to an end. Thank you so much. In March, I'm coming to Red Bank, New Jersey, Columbus, Cincinnati, Louisville, and Buffalo. Come and see me. It's a party. It's an hour-long show. It's really funny and fun. And then it just turns into a party. We hang out. We drink. We do pictures. I sign books. I stay as long as you want.
It's
we listen to music.
It's like a party. Yeah. There's like no time limit.
And especially these last five shows, like I'm going to be soaking in every second with you all. So come and see me. Get your tickets at patrickfails.com.
It's like the Rolling Stones. You're going on a farewell tour, but you're not going anywhere.
Yeah,
so it's a farewell tour for this show, but then you have other things planned.
Yeah, that's
it. You are basically Mick Jagger.
I'd like, come say goodbye to this beautiful show with me.
It's
been really fun.
Yeah.
Join our Facebook group. It's the True Crime Obsessed Podcast Discussion Group. Join us on Patreon.
Yep.
What are we doing next?
We are doing the murder of Lorenzen Wright.
Ooh.
He was that basketball player who was murdered, and there's a lot around. It's a pretty wild story.
Wow. Yeah. All right. Well, stay tuned for the trailer for that. Our funny and hilarious outtakes, if we had any, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know either.
They did not.
This was a heavy one, but a really good one.
It was very well done.
Yeah.
And 42 minutes.
I know.
Take note, everyone. We can do it. If we all work together, we can do it.
Yes. All right, fam. We love you.
We love you.
Bye.
Bye.
We checked all his friends from here to Atlanta, Mississippi, everywhere, so I don't have a clue.
Deborah Marion is talking about her son, Lorenzen Wright. The last time anyone in her family saw the 6'11 former NBA player was Sunday night. Marion says Wright was at his ex-wife's home in Collierville between 10 and 11. When the ex woke up, he was gone, their car still in the driveway.
That weekend, he needed to be home for his sister's baby shower. He never showed up. I called him all that day. Never answered the phone, never returned my call. I'm talking the whole 3 days, and he didn't call nobody back.
I don't know what I expected.